Don't let the calculators fool you. Mathematicians are an exciting bunch. Every 4 years for the past 119 years, they've gathered in a major city to discuss the big questions they're trying to solve. It's called the International Congress of Mathematicians. It's kind of like the Olympics for the math world, but without the overspend on stadiums. And just like the Olympics, it has a history of outstanding human achievement, controversy, and boycotts. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are looking at the International Congress of Mathematicians, and we're asking what happened to one Soviet scientist who was the first to solve a foundational problem in mathematics. Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford. And for this story, we are going back to Paris in 1900. Paris was a hive of activity. Horse-drawn carriages filled the streets. People marveled at the newest addition to the city, the Eiffel Tower. The Paris Expo had just introduced the world to diesel engines, escalators, and talking films. So you could see why this was the perfect spot for the International Congress of Mathematicians to hold their second session. And on the scene at that time was German mathematician David Hilbert.
Foundational matters was one thing that he was interested in, sort of providing a sort of rigorous bedrock from which to build geometry. And so the idea was that perhaps you should be able to do that for the rest of mathematics.
That's Dr. Chris Hollings, a historian of mathematics at the University of Oxford. He says David Hilbert was inspired by the new beginning of the century, so he came up with a list of 23 problems. If solved, he figured, they could establish the base of all other mathematical discovery. And that's what he presented at the Congress in Paris.
They tend to be open problems from anywhere in mathematics that he thought there was a need to do things. So geometry or algebra, or I think there's something that touches on physics. Places where there are either obvious open problems or where he thought the theory could perhaps have more development to sort of flesh it out. Hilbert had his 23 problems. He only had time in, I assume he had an hour time slot to present these, and he only got through about 10, I think, and then published the rest afterwards.
As the decades passed, people tried really hard to solve these problems, or even part of the problems. But Chris says, as the mathematicians gathered, politics often got in the way of the Congress.
There was a little bit of tension in Heidelberg in 1904, where comparatively few French mathematicians went, as compared with German mathematicians in Paris in 1900, because the Franco-Prussian War was still a slightly sensitive subject. And then the next one was planned for Stockholm in 1916, but it didn't take place for obvious reasons.
1914, at 11:10 in the morning, on Tuesday, July 28th, on a hot summer day, Emperor Franz Joseph of Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia. Kaiser Wilhelm supported him, mobilizing the great...
After the First World War, the organizing committee, made up of a bunch of European countries who really suffered during it, decided that they were going to make a political statement by banning Germany in 1920. 8 years later, the Germans were allowed back in, but there was a lot of tension. And so, as we head into the 1930s, Chris says Hilbert's 23 problems were still looking for solutions.
There's been partial progress towards some of them, but certainly one definitely has been solved by this stage, and that's the seventh problem, solved by a Russian mathematician, Alexander Gelfond.
1934, Gelfond has a breakthrough. It's about transcendental numbers. These are the numbers that appear to go on for forever and have no repeating pattern in the digits.
And the most famous transcendental number is probably pi, but that had only been proved to be transcendental in the 1880s, even though for centuries people had suspected that there was something a bit weird about pi as a number. And there weren't very many examples of transcendental numbers around, so that's probably why Hilbert posed a problem concerning transcendental numbers. But Hilbert's problem was a very general one, so any two algebraic numbers, can you do this? Is this necessarily transcendental? The answer is yes, and this is what Gelfand proved.
Chris has done a lot of digging into Gelfond, and he's a bit of a mystery. Even though he has this title of being the first person to solve a Hilbert problem, there isn't a lot of information about him out there.
He was sort of born at the beginning of the 20th century and studied in Moscow in the 1920s, so I suppose he was very firmly a product of the Soviet educational system. By 1936, I think he had a post in Moscow and also at the Academy of Sciences. And in terms of biography, that's about as much as I know about him before 1936. But certainly he published his solution to the problem in a Soviet journal, but in French, which was very common at that time. There was a sort of deliberate effort to publish things in languages that people outside the Soviet Union could read. As the 1930s went on, that was stamped out and everything had to be in Russian. So publishing this in French in 1934 is one of the last times it would have been possible to do that. So I think the solution was known outside the Soviet Union. That's why he got this invitation to come and speak.
Gelfand is getting ready to present at the 1936 Congress in Oslo, but you guessed it, things were kicking off in Europe.
Hitler was in power in Germany by this time, so the idea was that German mathematicians would send an official delegation to the Congress where they would showcase the very best of Aryan mathematics. There was an Italian delegation expected, but they boycotted because Norway had condemned what Italy was doing in Abyssinia at the time, and the Soviets were expected, but they didn't show up.
Chris says, out of nowhere, Soviet mathematicians start cooking up excuses, claiming they're too sick or they're too busy to come to the Congress.
So it's from Pavel Alexandrov to Richard Courant, who is a Jewish-German mathematician. So the letter says, our trip to Oslo was prevented quite unexpectedly by the fact that just at that moment, very important and for our scientific life, crucial problems in particular regarding our Academy of Sciences had occurred. The presence of all mathematicians of the Soviet Union in the moment of restructuring of the highest mathematical organism of the country was basically necessary. As far as I am personally concerned, I could not have come to Oslo anyway because I have been suffering for about a month from a heavy and unpleasant carbuncle from an insect bite. It's very peculiar.
I feel like that bug bite excuse has all the nuanced complexity of the dog ate my homework. But hey, that's how it went. And just like all of his Soviet peers, in 1936, Alexander Gelfand, who was all set to make his plenary presentation over his big solution, made his excuses and didn't go.
Stalin had been in power since the end of the 1920s. He was increasing his grip on Soviet science, among other things. Scientists had enjoyed, perhaps autonomy is a bit strong, but certainly they'd had a lot of independence, and he was sort of cracking down on this. It was a matter of control. Probably linked to things that were happening in Moscow at that time, particularly something called the Luzin Affair. Nikolai Luzin was a Moscow mathematician. He had lots of foreign contacts, and he seems to have provided the focus he was attacked by people in the academy and outside the academy for his foreign contacts, among many other charges that were brought against him, that he was too friendly with foreigners, that he published his best work abroad and was therefore undermining Soviet science. He was accused of plagiarising his students' work, which may or may not have been true. So he was hauled before a special commission of the Academy of Sciences around the time that the ICM was taking place. And in the end, he got off quite lightly, but there was a sort of clear message to Soviet scientists generally that you should be publishing your work in Soviet journals, you shouldn't be having extensive contacts with foreigners, you should be focused very much on bettering the Soviet Union or whatever. And so when Gelfand didn't show up at the ICM, along with all the other Soviet delegates that were expected, I don't think it was anything personally directed against him. It was just sort of blanket refusal to grant permission for people to travel.
Chris says the 1936 Congress in Oslo went on, but it was dominated with talk of what are the Germans up to? And then, for another really obvious reason, the Congress was put on hold.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This country is at war with Germany.
Gelfand continued to work on his theories. Chris says soon he became a part of the Soviet war effort.
As far as I can tell, with the limited biography that's available, he just sort of carried on his work. There's anecdotal evidence that he was head of cryptography for the Soviet Navy during the war, but I don't know of any firm evidence of that, but that's just sort of been hinted somewhere. In the West, we're used to the idea that after a certain length of time, things are declassified. It doesn't seem to work quite like that in Russia. The default is to keep things secret, it seems.
After Stalin died in 1953, Soviet scientists started coming back to the international mathematical community, but still faced travel restrictions over going to the West. And in 1966, a turning point, Moscow would take a turn hosting the Congress.
The Soviet Union certainly had a reputation for being a powerhouse of mathematics, and that's probably one of the reasons why the Soviet government was prepared to let their mathematicians reintegrate into the international mathematical community, just to show off this mathematical talent.
In one old newsreel called Soldier Mathematician, you see a Soviet soldier in his full uniform walking into a room of hundreds of mathematicians at the start of the Congress. And I can't help but think that somewhere in that big room was Gelfand. Now a much older man, still working on mathematics, this would be the closest he would get to the International Congress of Mathematicians, not as a presenter, but as an attendee. Виктор Мазуров был в числе представителей советской математической школы. Chris says Gelfand led a pretty uneventful life before his death in the late 1960s. But his work became a foundation for others to build off, just as Hilbert envisioned for the problems. This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks for the University of Oxford. Our theme is by John Lyons, and additional music on this episode came from the very talented Dana Boulay. Special thanks to Dr. Chris Hollings and to the BBC Archive. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet us at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook. And of course, we've got a lot of other cool stuff on our website. Go to oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias, and until next time on the podcast, when we ask, how open should open data be? Bye for now.